Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me again for this episode. And today I have on my guest, Vandal Drummond. We talk about Southern California wrestling, Lucha Libre, Dr. Jerry Graham, and much more. Also, be sure to check out Vandal with Ray Russell on one of the regional wrestling shows as they discuss the dying days of the Los Angeles territory. The first episode is available now, where they set the stage by discussing LA in the 70s. It's a great episode, and it is going to be a great series on regional wrestling. So check them out. Look it up wherever you get your podcast, or go to WrestleCopia.com. Today's interview is a great companion piece of that, and it will give you some background on Vandal. So let's take a very quick break. And when we come back, I'll have that interview with the one, the only, the extraordinarily unique Vandal Drummond. So stick around.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Hillsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, in Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am being joined this time by the uniquely extraordinary Vandal Drummond. Sir, how are you?
I am doing quite well, and thank you for the very direct and very complimentary introduction. I appreciate it.
You've been known by so many things, though. It's hard to know. I mean, I know you particularly, specifically go by Vandal Drummond, but you've worn many masks in your days.
Yes, partially thanks to Johnny Legend's incredibly strange wrestling back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I probably had more identities than your average wrestler. That's one thing I can boast. I can't boast that I was one of the best wrestlers or, you know, just, but I can boast that I probably had more identities than most wrestlers.
Yeah, it was incredibly strange wrestling, and you certainly had some incredibly strange identities.
That was half the fun, just trying to think of angles and gimmicks to come up with. And Johnny Legend was so fun to work with because he had wacky ideas that were just like out there. But he always let us throw in our ideas and gimmicks. He was fun to work for, and he actually paid us better than the average promoter did too.
Yeah, but that's what it's all about, right? It's pro wrestling, man. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be serious. I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
We're supposed to have a little fun.
Never take yourself too seriously.
No.
It's a doomed situation.
That's right. That's what you know what I mean. As Bob Dylan said, he not busy being born is busy dying. So, you know.
I like that. I like that a lot.
So, you know, I feel like I'm always busy being born. So, we mentioned you're a Southern California guy.
And yes.
That has always been at a booming wrestling scene. What were you watching growing up that hooked you on professional wrestling?
One of the greatest things about living in Southern California was I started watching in 1972. Hmm. And one of the great things about Southern California TV, they had all these UHF stations, you know, that had a lot of them had snowy reception except for the really local LA ones.
Yeah.
But I was a TV bug, and I was always going through those UHF channels. And after I discovered, you know, the LaBelle promotion, mm-hmm. that was the first wrestling I ever watched. When I started exploring, one of the UHF channels would always, I shouldn't say always, but often, you would just come across a wrestling show that was on there for whatever reason. That same year that I started watching the LaBelle promotion, I've told this story many times. I discovered Titanes en el Ring from Argentina, which is like the original Incredibly Strange Wrestling.
Yeah.
And not just very popular in Argentina, but iconic in Argentina. When you go to, Comic-Con type stuff there, there's people selling old Titanes en el Ring memorabilia. There's the promoter and star of the show, Martin Cara de Guillén. He passed away in 91, I believe it was, but his daughter still runs shows, and it's not what it was, but you see older people bringing their grandkids just to see Titanes en el Ring.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a few episodes that I uploaded on YouTube, right, that I somehow yes. I come across a few discs of it, and I get almost as many comments just on those few episodes as I do anything else. Of all these people like, oh, I remember this. And oh, uh-huh. you know, it's like, this is amazing. And then there's all these, you know, then you get a whole, all this slew of people who are like, what in the world is this?
In fact, I remember the first night I ever saw it because on that same UHF station, it was KWHY Channel 22. They, for a while, they were airing wrestling from somewhere in Mexico. I don't know where. It definitely wasn't the big promotion. It wasn't in Arena Mexico or Coliseo. And I'd occasionally look at it. But then one night I turned it on to see, you know, all right, I switch channels to see what's taking place in Mexico on this channel tonight. And I see a clown dancing to the ring, to the music, with a bouquet full of balloons. It was Pepino the Clown. And I'm like 10 years old, and I'm thinking, oh, this is, I think they're trying to make fun of wrestling or something. And so I kind of stuck my tongue at it and went back to Channel 13 to see, you know, all my heroes, John Tolis, Tony Rocco, all those cats. But I would keep going back to that channel. And then the next thing I saw was a space creature who had a magic pacifying gun in case his opponent got too unruly. It would turn a Rudo into a baby face.
Yeah.
And then I saw Mummy, which is probably their most famous character ever.
Yep,
La Momia. And that year, I didn't realize it until much later, that was the perfect year for me to see Argentina wrestling because it was huge. It was on TV for the most part for 28 years. and was always very successful, but that year was particularly successful at introducing that 1972 version of The Mummy. Went over huge with not just the people watching Titanus in the ring, but the general public. There were magazines writing about it, being like the phenomenon of the year, and just talking about the creativity. And that was also the year they came out with an album, an LP that you can, find on eBay sometimes, that has all their theme songs. In fact, you can find a lot of those theme songs on Amazon.com. But whoever the songwriters were, I mean, they wrote really catchy tunes. If you heard these tunes once, they'd be in your head all day. And I've been going on about Argentina, but some of the other shows over the years, from me being 10 years old to like 17-year-old adolescence, sometimes you get a show on one of the stations from somewhere in Mexico, don't know where again. One station showed the All Japan Women in 1977.
That's crazy.
Another showed what was then WWWF in, I think, 75. One of the most curious ones, and again, this was that first year I started watching wrestling. One of the Spanish TV stations, which is now Trinity Broadcasting Network. So I don't watch much of that. But, said Lucha Libre's on that channel. And so I turned it on, and it was, old tapes that were already probably 8 years old of like Dick the Bruiser, Johnny Valentine, Roger Kirby, and it was narrated in Spanish. And I never got the gist of that. None of these shows that aired, not once that I can recall, did any of the promoters say, "Hey, we're coming to your town." It was just this channels would just air it for the sake of airing it.
So that would have been probably old LA stuff, right? I mean, is what they were airing then. I mean, with Bruiser and stuff then.
No, that's a funny thing. It was I think it was the Chicago promotion. It was like,
Oh, so it wasn't even the LA stuff when Bruiser was
no, it
in
wasn't the
LA.
LA stuff. There was no rhyme or reason to what they were doing.
That's weird because that's even. I mean, are we talking Bob like Bob Luce stuff, or is that even pre-Bob Luce?
I think that was pre-Bob Luce. It
That's
was black and white, let's put it that
it,
way.
okay. So we're talking like maybe DuMont stuff, and like that's weird.
It was very strange. And it was, everybody talks about what a strange place California is. And yeah, the TV stations are strange too. And I thank God for that. Totally.
I mean, I always thought I grew up in Indiana. And I got where I lived in Indiana, I could pick up Indianapolis stations, Cincinnati stations, and Louisville stations because we were so central, right between those three. So when I was a kid, I always thought, oh, this is great, right? I can see the Indianapolis stuff. I see the Memphis stuff out of Louisville and occasionally pick up some stuff out of Cincinnati. But that's nothing like what you're seeing out there.
The other treat I got was my when I was 12, my mom took a job up at Sacramento. So my dad and I would go there every couple of weekends to just hang out with her in Sacramento. And I got to see Roy Shire's TV.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that was like a real eye opener and
I bet.
just kind of putting in your head how the business works, because guys who were on top in our territory were doing TV jobs for Shires, or they were going over and they were a heel instead of a baby face. And that's the funniest part is LA TV aired up in that territory too. So you could see Moondog Bane as a baby face one night and then watch him as a heel up in Shire or in LA territory the next. So, I learned at a very young age that the business is definitely wacky, and Kenji Shibuya might be a nice, cuddly old guy in Los Angeles, but watch out when he gets to San Francisco, he's going to karate chop you in the throat.
Well, like you said, I mean, being in Southern California, obviously, you got lots of lucha stuff, right? You were getting some things like we talked about the Argentina stuff, but I mean, other stuff, you talked about some stuff out of Mexico and whatever. When do you remember first seeing Lucha? Because you're known for kind of being a very, you're a very strong supporter of Lucha, obviously. So when did you first see it, and when did it, you hook it? Like, I mean, this is special. This is something different.
I always thought the Luchadores were very special when they were in LA, but it was only when they were wrestling each other when you'd see a full on lucha match. One that comes to mind is I remember seeing Coloso Colasetti, who just passed away last year, wrestling El Solitario. And I was like 11, and I'm saying, wow, this is kind of different. But I didn't realize at the time that how different the Mexican and the American styles were.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a real treat living in L.A. at that time, because they frequently brought wrestlers from Mexico in. Ray Mendoza, Dory Dixon, all, you know, they just didn't bring like one or two to say, hey, let's bring in you know, our Latino audience. I think they did a little bit when the Guerreros came in. They focused more on the Guerreros and less on guys coming in from Mexico. But when I saw my first actual wrestling show that was 100% lucha, was I was living up in Oregon one year, and I came down for spring break, and a guy had just made friends with a guy named Lloyd Lee, said, you got to see the Mexican shows. These lucha shows, they're all just local guys, but they're really good. They, you know, said for $4, you can sit anywhere you want in the dance hall, and, you know, cheap tacos and beer. And so I was on board. And for a promotion in 1981, I was 19 at the time, you know, indie promotions have come a long way since then. But back then, that was the best promoted and constructed independent show I had ever seen. In the opening bout, you could tell the wrestlers were really well trained, because the opening bouts would be hold for hold wrestling, really strong, really firm. You know, I mean, really solid in their mat work. And they would do maybe a couple of high spots near the finish. But, and as each match went on, the wrestlers kind of bumped up the rhythm a bit, you know, like they were trained very well. You know, the opening bout guys don't upstage the guys in the main event. I know that's not as much a thing anymore, but to me, I always appreciated it. I thought that was a great way of telling a story, to get people warmed up in the opener and gradually get them more into it. And the main event, you know, you deliver in their sight. And the main event was a 6-man tag, and it was just nonstop lucha style mat work, high spots. I was hooked. And well, 10 years later, I started wrestling with a lot of those local boys that I used to watch at Hadco Plaza. And that's actually been one of the greatest experiences, being involved in wrestling, is they started doing lucha shows in the early 70s here in LA. Most of the guys are, some were guys who wrestled in Mexico and moved here, or were learning to wrestle. And trying to think, I think they'd promote on and off into the mid 70s, and then they acquired Hadco Plaza, ran there for a couple of years. But the whole lucha community has been a thing since the early 70s. And it's like every now and then on a Friday, I'll go have breakfast with all the guys. We'll meet at Denny's. And it's like all these guys are in their 70s and they're still tight. They're still together. A lot of them have children or even grandchildren who wrestle on the local scene now. And it's just a really neat little community. It's not just one of these brotherhoods where you keep in touch every now and then. It's like these guys are like practically neighbors, and you know we're just really, really happy to be part of that community.
Yeah, it's funny because growing up in the Midwest, right, we didn't get lucha, and you know, I read about it in some magazines, right? I thought Mil Mascaris was, you know, the big, was just hugely exotic guy because he was on all the magazines, but you know, it was always fascinating to me. And then I remember in like the late 80s when we got our first satellite dish. It was just the monstrous whatever 10 foot dish in the backyard that would move, and it was so weird.
A big science fiction device of some kind.
It was so odd. And we would I was scanned through stuff, and I came across it one time, and I thought, this is it. I found it, right? This is Lucha. Mm-hmm. And I sat there, so I watched it, and I remember watching it for the first time. I thought, it blew my mind, right? Even beyond my expectations. I thought, this is so far beyond what is being shown on TV in America. This is just remarkable.
In my opinion, Mexico is light years ahead of its time.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you can see the influence all over modern style of wrestling.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this in Japanese, right? I mean, there's this almost this hybrid is what is now the American style.
It's fascinating. And while I kind of miss the old school Lucha, you know, things evolve. It's just the way it is. And at the same time, I'm really touched when I see what a hybrid it is, when you see people like Daniel Bryan wrestling Mexican style with Blue Panther. And then like they're working with got people in Japan. Like when I was growing up and when I was first training to wrestle in the early 80s, you'd hear, that's when I first realized their style clashes. And there's a lot of American guys didn't want to have to wrestle the Mexican style. Now it looks like everybody wants to wrestle everybody else's style. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so cool.
Yeah.
And, recently, this last couple of months, when I saw a match from Arena Mexico that had Daniel Bryan versus Blue Panther, I was in awe of Daniel Bryan because I thought I was watching a 1970s heel wrestler from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this guy must have studied his history. He was wrestling. The personality he was exuding in that show was like that of a 70s a Lucha heel. One of the things I loved about the Mexican style was how it was straight wrestling. There was some mic work, but very little. The equivalent of mic work was in the ring of people like Pirata Morgan and MSA Uno being so demonstrative in the ring, almost like they're a silent movie actor. You know, using a lot of facial expressions, you know, kind of to make up for the lack of talk. And, you know, it's changed now. They do a lot more mic work than they used to. Yeah. But, you know, I'm glad I got to see it when I did.
Yeah, and a lot of that hybrid, you know, style was began there in Southern California, right? I mean, it's Southern California has such a big impact on modern wrestling. Obviously, I mean, you know, we see AEW and all this and that. But, I mean, a lot of that started there with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and of course guys like the Young Bucks and such like that, who, you know, Southern California boys. So what was it like being there as these things are developing? I mean, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla was the hot ticket there for a long, you know, I know it still is, but I mean, there for a while it was the it show. What was it like being in Southern California?
Well, I'll tell you, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, I don't think I've done this at any other show, but several of those shows that were in the downtown LA theater, I can't remember. It's not the Mayan, is it? I'm blanking. I'm getting old. I'm in my 60s now. I forget what is one of those old movie theaters, though, where it was being held.
Yeah.
And it was like, you weren't just going to a wrestling match. You were going to a party. This was a party. And I was in the front row with my friend Fredo Esparza and a few other people. And I was so into the action. I was like a fan again, you know, being there front row, which, you know, you've been working in the business, you know. And when I say working the business, I worked in the business part-time. I was never full-time on the road or anything like that.
Yeah.
But still, you don't go acting like a fan. That night, I didn't care. I was just acting like a fan. And everybody around me was having such a great time. And
It reminds me of like when Ring of Honor kind of debuted and started to get, you know, where it's like you could feel, or like early ECW and those kind of, it's like those times and promotions where you could feel, it's like you could feel the shift in wrestling. And you're like, this is something, and this is going to impact, and you can't help but get caught up in it.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it. And one of the things I'll always love about Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, I hope it comes around again. I just love that vibe.
Yeah.
But well, similar, I remember I went, my friend Eric Anderson, who used to wrestle here as Ebony Blade, he turned me on to AEW in 2019, I believe it was. It was when they had their first big pay-per-view in Vegas. And I remember it was a totally different scene to me. I said, wow, this really is different. But I wasn't thinking so much in terms of, well, it's different when I used to watch. I saw what fun people were having. And to me, that's what it's all about. Just seeing people have that same rush that I had when I was a little kid. I remember my very first match was at the Olympic Auditorium to see Rey Mendoza and Raul Reyes win the belts, the tag belts from Ripper Collins and Gordon Nelson. And just, I'll never forget the way I felt at being at that first show and seeing it live. And, you know, I go to a lot of shows where, you know, they're good, you know, the crowd's good. But sometimes you go to a show where it looks like the people are having the times of their life. And, you know, it just reminds me of getting that thrill when I was younger.
Yeah, I don't, it's like, I don't understand, because I have what I like, right? And there's obviously things that I don't like, but I don't understand why that's got to be such a conflict. Because it's like, if there's something I don't like, it's okay. I just don't, I don't watch it. I mean, it's like, I don't pay much attention to it. And if somebody else, it's like, if somebody else loves that wrestling, great. I'm happy. That's cool. And and it reminds me though of being young in the territories. It was, you know, territories have each had a different flavor and a different style. And, you know, and I mean, people knocked, I grew up in Indianapolis wrestling, and people knocked Indianapolis wrestling. But it was the best thing in the world to me when I was a kid. And I get it, right? You know, I get it. It's different than Memphis. I love Memphis and I love this and that, but it'll always be my favorite because I grew up on it. I loved it. And I don't get why it's got to be an either or. You know, why can't people just like what they like? And
exactly. I mean, I'll tell you,
worry about the rest.
The only thing I watch, you know, regularly these days, just because there's so much wrestling now, you don't have time to catch even half of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I mainly watch CMLL Mexico, and I can't even say I do that all the time. And it's not that I think the other wrestling sucks. I'll admit, if I turn on WWE or AEW, I don't have the same enthusiasm I did years ago. But obviously, it's working, and people like it. So who am I to say, you know, this isn't good? It's just... It's just not my cup of tea a lot of the time.
Yeah, and no matter what I watch, I typically can pick out something that I enjoy. There's something. If I watch whatever, there's typically a certain guy or a certain match or something that I think, oh, that was all right. That was pretty good. And I just, I'm like, okay, that I enjoyed that. Why? So I don't care. It's like, I don't know. And I get people taking it serious. I take it serious. I'm passionate about it.
Yes.
But I don't understand... I don't know. It's not life or death. It's I get some people get a little too caught up. And I mean, on the one hand, I get it. But on the other hand, I'm like, take a breath. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, it's similar to movies and music. Because I remember when I was a kid, I'd get so annoyed when, you know, older adults, usually a little over the age of 50, are bitching and moaning like, you know, these movies today suck, or this rock and roll music is terrible. Oh. And I remember sometimes. People my age doing the same thing. So it's a cyclical thing. Yeah. And I don't want to be that old man. If I don't like something, I just go to something else. And
it is definitely horrible music. And I don't you get that all the time, right? You get somebody and they're like, oh, they sold out because they sold a million records or sold so many records. I'm like, what do you think they were trying to do? You don't think they were trying to make a career and make money at this? I'm like,
yeah, it might sound romantic being that traveling vagabond who's on the road all the time. But if you actually tried to do it, no, I think you want that $1 million. I think you want some stability.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. And it's like, I don't know. Why can't there be a balance? I don't get it.
And, I agree.
And I speaking totally agree. Of the California scene, we can't talk about the California scene without talking about Dave Meltzer. When do you remember first meeting Dave Meltzer?
It's funny, we had a phone relationship for several years before we met face to face. I was sharing an apartment with again, my friend Lloyd Lee, and we were both big newsletter buffs in the early 80s. And when Dave started the Wrestling Observer newsletter, he just got addresses of as many people as he could who took sheets and kind of like, kind of sent an announcement that he's going to start the bulletin. And he made it something fun where he had everybody send in who they thought the top, their top 10 wrestlers were, that kind of thing. And we were intrigued. And one of the eccentric things that my friend Lloyd and I used to do at that time, if there was somebody in a new who did a newsletter or somebody who intrigued us like that, we would call information and get their phone number and just cold call them. And most of the time that it led to like long friendships. And when I started talking to Dave Meltzer, I think for the next few years we're talking at least twice a week. And he was still learning about the business. And yeah, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, it was the first newsletter that just dared to break kayfabe. And most people I know liked it. The ones who didn't would didn't they didn't like it. But same in how would I say the early 90s when some of the indie guys were starting to be seen. They'd say, "Oh, Dave Meltzer's newsletter, it means nothing. Nobody cares." But then they'd call me on the phone and say, "What did Dave Meltzer say about my match? How many stars did he give it?"
I mean, I remember I was, man, I was hooked when I first, discovered Meltzer and the Observer and subscribed, because it's like, I remember getting it and thinking, oh, this is it, right? This is, there's other people out there like me that love this and love for it enough that that's all they want to talk about. And they just, so it was, and it's
Totally,
like,
totally.
it was just it was a revelation. And I appreciated, the, all the magazines and the kayfabe site. I like that. I liked anything wrestling. But it was so cool because I don't know, back then, you find out a wrestler's real name and you felt like you found out the magician's secret. It was just weird
You
to just,
feel cool. You feel
yeah,
so
like you
cool.
felt like you were an insider. And
Exactly.
I don't, I mean, it's hard. I think it is hard for current fans that haven't been longtime fans to understand what it was like to be fans back then, where, where you were getting information from the newsletters and the magazines and you were trading tapes and cold calling people and bugging people until they talked to us. I mean, I would go to local shows and just, I would just bug the hell out of people and just talk to
That's
them
great.
until they, I mean, I worked my way in, thank you, and because I would look, talk to them and say, hey, that little newsletter, I can do that newsletter a little better than you. I'm pretty smart with that stuff. I can make that look better. And of course, their first question, well, what are you gonna charge me? I was like, nothing. I'll just do it for you. Cause I like, so that was my foot in, and then, and the next thing they, I'm hanging around, I'm having to set up the rings, and then they're, oh, it's okay. Hey, well, you want to manage some guys? We can train you a little bit and teach you to manage. And then next thing it's like, oh, a guy no-showed and didn't, you want to work a match? You know enough, you can get you through. And so it's like, that's how it was back then, right? You just bugged
I hung
people.
around. Most wrestlers, they'd be nice to me, but they wouldn't get too close. But first wrestlers I knew were the two guys working LA, Bobby Lane and whose real name was Bobby Pico, and Tim Flowers. And then the following year I became friends with Ed Moretti. That first year I got to know when I actually started hanging around a lot. Got to know Dr. Jerry Graham. And eventually that's how I kind of got involved, is just knowing people. And it all really started with Tom Burke, who, when I was 17, gave me my first press pass when he was the editor for Ring Wrestling. And so I was able to get, the wrestlers still kayfabed me, but they were really nice in giving me interviews, that sort of thing. And so around 1979 is when I started kind of hanging around, but it was about 2 years later when I actually started getting to know people.
Well, I'm a little younger than you. I was about a decade behind you, but that's the way it still was then, though. I would, I just came, did my thing, like I said, started doing the noodler, started helping set up the ring, just like anything you want me to do, set up chairs, whatever, whatever. And then it was
Yeah, make
just,
yourself available,
and then it was just being around and them learning to trust you and learning that you knew. It was weird, like in the Midwest, like there was a, there's Bobo Brazil Jr., right? That wrestled still, he still wrestles. But it's like, I remember, like one of my first times hanging around, he came in. I was like, holy crap, that's Calypso Jim. And they're like, that's Calypso Jim? I'm like, well, hell yeah, I watched him on TV. And they're like, well, that's Bobo Brazil Jr. I'm like, no, that's, so it's like they appreciated that. Oh, he knows, right? He's not just some, and that's what we had to do. And it's like, if you wanted it enough, you just You made, I mean, it's almost like you made yourself as much of an irritation
I
until
don't,
they let you in.
and you have to know how to pace it too.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's still in touch with a guy named Hal Klein, who actually, he never wrestled, but he was the one who, taught me how to, get my body bulked up training essentially to get a wrestler's body back in the day. But he would hang around the wrestlers and he would drop like their real names in front of him. And
Oh.
usually they were like chuckling about it, but he was driving Buddy Rose somewhere and he made a like one-liner about a guy named Paul Pershman. And this does sound like Buddy Rose. Buddy Rose like looked back at him, freaked out, like, "How do you know that?" And goes, "Oh, I friend told me that's your name." And goes, "Oh, okay, that's my name, but it's really important that nobody knows that."
Yeah.
And poor Hal is feeling like, "Oh, did I just snitch on the CIA or something like
Yeah.
that?"
And it
Some
was
guys
like,
could get a little strange about it.
yeah, and every step that I got, I was happy, right? I started doing the
Yeah.
newsletters and said, I thought, well, this is great. My life's good. And then when they came to me, it's like, hey, you could talk pretty good. You want to be a manager and we could teach you to do and train you. I'm like, are you serious? It's like each step, I felt like I had achieved my goal and my dream and I was happy. And then it just like being around, it was all about opportunities and just being there until something, no, somebody no showed or something opened up. But like,
And you got your spot.
the little local promotion. That's why I got to be managed, right? They wanted someone who was from that area. They knew would be there every show. So it's like, hey, what about this kid? He's always here.
Yeah.
He's always around. Why not
And it
him?
worked out beautifully for me, because there was a short time where I thought, I want to be in the business, but I learned that I'm not a good fit in the business. I
Yeah.
wasn't really I'm not
Oh.
really a man's man. I'm a quirky nerd, so that I was able to do what I did and be on the indie scene part-time for a number of years, and actually got to do some booking for Michinoku Pro again, thanks to Dave Meltzer, got me that gig. I got a taste of it, but I never had to worry about where's my next income coming from.
That's
I kept my day job.
Yeah, me too. And that's the way, I mean, I was never an alpha male. So it's like some
Same
of these
here. Yeah.
guys, I was like, it's like, some of the guys, a lot of the guys, some of the guys, I was just uncomfortable, right? These super alpha males. I was like, that's not me.
You and
What am
me
I going to
both.
talk to this guy about? It's
That's
like,
exactly the way it was with me.
where's the guy in this locker room that reads comic books and stuff like me? I'm like, come on. So I was ahead of my, I mean, I think I came too early. And
Me too. Me too. If I was born 20 years later, I'd probably be a bit of a better fit. Although physically, I'm amazed at the stuff they can do today. I don't know if I could do that even in my prime.
No.
I'm really impressed just the physicality of all the workers today.
It is nuts. I just they are I mean, yeah, there's just such advanced athlete. But tell us, okay, your career. We talked about you've had many names. I'm not even
Yes.
going to begin to list all these, but did you have a favorite that you worked under, or that one that just was just the quirky, super quirky, that jumps out at you but from your career?
Well, Lucky Pierre was an exotico, a masked exotico whose pink mask had a big grin on it and crossed eyes. And he wore a pink singlet. On the back of it wrote the word slut. And I wouldn't
Again,
say I had my strongest matches.
that'd be a hit right now.
Yeah. Well, back then it got over gangbusters. And the funniest thing was that wasn't even my best work. I think being Vandal Drummond is what worked the best. Just kind of, especially when I was a heel, being the heel who I think I was kind of channeling the talents of Negro Casas and Jim Cornette, kind of like this bratty little skateboarding kid who's, just thinks he's really fly and is all over the baby faces, but then whines like a bitch when things don't go his way.
Yep.
That really got over well. And I also like being Vandal Drummond the baby face, only because I know everybody wants to be heel, but I think it's more of a challenge to get over as a baby face.
It's so much harder.
And so I like doing that just to see if I could win the crowd over. And to be honest, it was hit and miss. Sometimes I won them over big time. Sometimes, you know, crickets.
That's what, when I managed and stuff and wrestled something, I was the heel that did anything, did all the gimmick matches, right? I got diapered. I ate the dog food. I did all that gimmicky stuff, right?
Yes.
And when I finally turned, you know, did a face turn and everything, it was going all right. But everybody, they were just waiting, knowing that at some point I was going to turn back heel. Everybody would sit there in that crowd. And I mean, I'd have people tell me, I don't trust you. I know you're going to do something. And it's like,
that's awesome.
So I'm like, awesome. So I'll be like, you know, we got to do this a little longer because they don't trust me yet. So it's like, and it's like, I didn't want to be a fake. I mean, it was fine. It was all right. But I'm like, it's so much easier to make people hate you.
It is. And I've always admired wrestlers who could do both equally. My favorite tag team of all time was Black Ordman and Great Goliath. There's a lot that exists of them apart from each other, like singles matches with Gordman or Goliath, or them teaming with other people. But there was very little video of them working. But there's one video from Texas. It's they are wrestling Jose Lothario and Buddy Moreno. Mm-hmm. And when you watch them work as a tag team, you're watching, in my opinion, the best tag team you ever saw. And that wasn't even their best night. And it was still one, when you watch them, the way they bumped, you could tell that they went to some serious wrestling school. I mean, they just did everything with such precision and they knew how to work the crowd just beautifully.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, the way they got heat when they were heels here in LA, the announcer Jimmy Lennon would say, you know, and hailing from Mexico, and they'd just give him this cold, cryptic look and shake their head and says, I'm sorry, claiming to be from New Mexico. Oh. So the Latino crowd would go off on them. And Goliath, when some fans were yelling something, you know, perverse at him, he'd say, shut up, Mexican. And that's the funniest part. They claim not to be Mexican, but Goliath spoke very little English, and Gordman, it was broken English.
Yeah.
And it was hysterical. And Goliath lived in California most of his life, actually. Never really learned much English, but was one of the premier wrestling teachers here in Southern California for a number of years. But yeah, the guy who hailed from New Mexico spoke very little English.
Well, you brought him up earlier. So let's talk. I can't talk to Vandal Drummond without talking about Dr. Jerry Graham.
Yes.
And man, I mean, you could talk for, I mean, everybody's talked so much about Dr. Jerry Graham, but when and how did you meet Dr. Jerry Graham?
In the summer of 81, Anton the Ripper Leone was promoting shows in the Fresno and Bakersfield area. So it was out of range of La Belle land. But the wrestling was so much better than LA wrestling. So my friend and I, we'd go to Strongbow Stadium in Bakersfield as many Saturday nights as we could. It was like an hour and a half drive and so worth it. You never knew who was going to pop in. Yeah, like one night you'd see Tor Kamada on the show putting somebody over just because he was passing through.
Yeah.
So one night, Dr. Jerry Graham had just started working there for Leone, and his ride home was via John Tolis. John Tolis is one of my heroes. I didn't know much about Jerry Graham at the time. I heard a few Dr. Jerry Graham stories, but I didn't know the whole. Tolis was one of my idols, and I'm hanging in the parking lot, like right outside the dressing room, and John Tolis walks up and says, hey, one of the boys says that you're from the LA area. And I went, yes, sir. I'm like, oh, my God, John Tolis is talking to me. He goes, well, you know, I'm supposed to be Dr. Jerry Graham's ride home tonight, but it's about a half hour out of my way. Is there any way I could get you to give him a ride home? And I'm like, Dr. Jerry Graham? I'm like, yes. Like, I just felt so honored I'm giving this legend a ride home. And actually, I remember Tim Flowers was there that night, too, even though he wasn't supposed to be because he's working the Bell territory. And he didn't wrestle on Leone's show. He was just hanging out there to see the doc. And so there's a couple of us in the backseat. The doc is riding shotgun, and Tim Flowers is driving because I had been drinking heavily. And so we're heading up on Highway 99, and the doc says, "Hey, Tim, pull over. I want to get a couple of beers." And nerdy 19-year-old me is saying, "Oh, I don't know if I should let people drink in my car, but, you know, it's Dr. Jerry Graham. And if only know what I said when I said it's just Dr. Jerry Graham." Because he came out of that liquor store with a couple of beers, a couple of bottles of hard stuff, a couple of bottles of wine, and probably even more beer, plus about a dozen cigars that he stole from the liquor store. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And I saw him do his Dr. Graham to Mr. Hyde conversion, because when he was sober, he was very well spoken, very scholarly. But it didn't take much booze in him for him to start to let out his war cry, which was just this, just this loud baritone bellow, and just screaming these obscenities. He is decried by Dr. Jerry Graham. You know, he would talk about people doing the most obscene things to their relatives. And he wouldn't just say this once or twice. He'd scream it all night long.
Yeah.
And he's downing these bottles and cans of beer, and he's just throwing them out onto the highway when he's done with them. And I'm, like, starting to freak out, like, oh, my God, am I going to jail tonight? You know, I think I was praying to every god imaginable, you know, Buddha, Krishna, Jesus, help me. And, you know, as he's escalating, he gets to this point where he has this bottle of wine that's maybe is a huge bottle, is maybe about a quarter of the way through. And he says, "Hey, I can't believe this. I can't finish this. So logically, what you do when you can't finish the rest of your bottle of wine, you water the dashboard with it like you're watering a garden.
Oh, no.
And I'm freaking out, like, what the hell are you doing? And he doesn't even look back. He just says, "Somebody have a pipe or something? Just hit him over the head. Knock that kid out for a bit. He's too loud." And we got him to his hotel, and I said, "Okay, I'm one and done." But curiosity got the best of me, and we'd give him rides up to the matches. We had a lot of fun rides with him. Well, he was just a lot of fun to be around. I know other people feel differently, and I can understand that. I say the secret to my friendship with him was I told him every secret about myself except for two. That was my home address and my telephone number, because he made some very famous visits to wrestlers' houses unannounced if he knew where you lived. So it was a conditional friendship. I made certain he didn't know where I lived.
Well, I'm pretty good friends with Jerry Jaffe, who obviously worked with the doctor a lot, right? Dr. Jerry Graham Jr. and everything else. And he reached out to me. It's been a little bit now, but he reached out to me and said, "Hey, Dave," because I've had him on my show so many times, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I got to come on." And this was around the dark side of the ring about the doc. And he's like, "I got to come on because it bugs me." He said, "Because you know what? I know the doc had his side. But he said that's all they talk about, the bad stuff and the alcohol and this and that." He said, "I want to come on and talk about the good side and some of the positives about him." And then I was like, "Sure, no problem," right? And you know, and he's got points, right? Because yes, everybody hears because the big stories, that's what people repeat. But Dr. Jerry Graham has such a huge impact on wrestling. And he did have a positive impact on a lot of guys in their careers and helping them, Jaffe being one and whatever else, but you know, so, and that gets kind of lost in the shuffle sometimes with the wild stories, I think. And
it's good. Cause he was kind of half and half, in my opinion. He was, he can be very drunk and boisterous and probably dangerous. I, you know, I'm sure there's lots of stories I don't know about him, but when he is sober, he was very well spoken, you know, and it was very surreal because I'd go to see him in his element, which he lived in downtown LA hotel, which was would have been a perfect setting for like a Raymond Chandler novel. You know, and when he was sober, he could be very well spoken. He'd watch wrestling and he'd point out everything the wrestlers are doing right and doing wrong and eloquently. And then you got boot him for whatever else drug was around. I mean, if there was grasping passed around, he would toke. And, you know, when he went over to that other side, it wasn't like you were hanging out with an silent movie character. You were hanging out with a silent movie actor because, it would be a combination of a Raymond Chandler novel, a science fiction, or not science fiction, silent movie comedy, and a Looney Tunes cartoon. You know, he'd be staggering all over the place. You know, he loved to just, when he was very drunk, just stand tall like a tower outside his hotel and just collapse like a tree being downed. And he'd have a smirk on his face while he did it. But yeah, there was a lot of sides to the Doc. And yeah, you know, I'm really glad I got to know him, and I understand why people avoided him. And I know there's a lot of bad things he did. There's a lot of things I didn't like about him, but overall I cared about him. I loved him. I'm glad I got to experience being friends with Dr. Jerry Graham.
That's what Jerry Jr. said. He says, I'm not naive. I know, right. I know he struggled with alcohol and whatever else. And I know he had his side, and I'm not denying the stories, but he said there's other stories too. And, you know, he's like, not just though, because you hear the same one. So, I always crack up, and I give Jerry a hard time about some of those early promotional pictures from his career where he's like sitting on Jerry's the senior's lap and things like that.
I know the
and
picture I'm like, you're talking about. I know the exact picture.
Yeah, it's like, it cracks me up, and it's just so funny. And everything else. But so we've talked, I mean, all kinds of stuff here, but in all these promotions throughout of all of wrestling, music plays such a big role, right? And especially on some of the promotions you've brought up. Mm-hmm. I got to know, because I'm a huge music guy, what does Vandal Drummond listen to?
Oh my God. I was very lucky to have, I'm the youngest, I have four siblings all older than me. So they had diverse tastes in music. My dad would play classical piano, but he also liked Hank Williams. He loved German beer drinking music. And when I was playing stuff late 70s, he was always interested in what I was listening to. He never said, that's crap.
Yeah.
So what I listened to, kind of an old soul. So I listened to a lot of incredible string band and Tom Waits, the early years of Tom Waits. I'm not as into his archiness years later. I'm a collector of soundtracks of Hair. You know, I'm a suburban hippie at heart, Rocky Horror. I'm one of those guys who I'm not into musicals except for, and I know there's a lot of people out there like this, who they love Hair, Rocky Horror Picture Show, and Jesus Christ Superstar. Like, I love listening to old Cab Calloway. There's just so much great music out there. In fact,
it is.
What's interesting is, you know, I started at a time where you didn't come into the ring to music.
Yeah.
And the first time I ever, you know, went to the ring with a song, I was going to go to Jethro Tull's Locomotive Breath. And it was a Hair versus Mask match. And, it was like probably a 300 seat arena, and it was packed. That was quite an accomplishment. It was with my friend Eric Anderson, and I can't remember what he came out to. It was really cool music, and he looked great. So I'm gonna go out to Locomotive Breath, but they were using cassette tapes, and the guy who was manning the music had the wrong side of the tape on, instead. I came out to Kate Bush's Strange Phenomenon.
Well, you know.
I had to get I had to work that night to be taken pretty seriously after
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and that's the way my dad was an avid vinyl collector. I mean, mm-hmm. he loved music. He just bought, it seemed like he bought everything, because when I grew up, he just had hundreds of albums. And when I remember being little and just going through these, and I didn't know who any of them were or what anything was. I just picked out albums who I liked the cover of, who I thought, oh, that looks cool. And so here I am, you know, I'm listening to like Iron Butterfly and stuff like that because the album cover looks so cool.
I think I did that a few times. Oh, one of the groups, a group that I love, and I bought it because of the cover of the record. And this was when I was 19. I was in a used record store up in Oregon. And this Danish group, the Savage Rose, they had an album called In the Plane. And it was a photo of them, a Danish group. And they just looked over the top, hippied out, kind of hippie glammed out. The lead vocals is this woman named Anisette. And in fact, they're huge in Denmark. I mean, they're like icons there. But it was the trippiest album cover I ever saw. And I said, this is $4. I'm buying this just for the cover. And it ends up that album, In the Plane, has become one of my favorite LPs of all time.
They can't get their thumb on me with music, right? Because they'll say, all right, what's some of the stuff you really like? And I'm like, well, you know, I love 70s rock stuff, right? I mean, you know, yes. Prime Stone stuff and whatever. I love all that. But then, you know, it's like, so I trace that back. I love blues. And it's like, so I love the electric blues. But I mean, I love Delta stuff. I mean, I love Robert Johnson. I can put Robert Johnson on and listen to him anytime. It's like, but, you know, every now and then I'll get it, you know, I'll get the whim and I'll put Run DMC on. Or, you know, every
There's
once in a
so
while.
There's so much good music out there.
Yeah, I want to throw some Taylor Swift. I mean, I'm like, I don't care if it just depends on my mood and what I'm looking for. And it's, you know, it's, I view it the same way I view wrestling. It's like, you know,
I'm
I
the
like
same
it,
way.
I like it. And it's, I don't care. There's
and it's endless. You never run out of the things to discover. And that's what I love about music. I've got a tin ear. I don't know how to play any instruments. I played a little piano when I was a kid, played the clarinet in junior high. I was bad at all of that. And I'm kind of glad I have a tin ear, because sometimes I'll listen to something and people will say, oh, this sounds so off key.
Oh,
this isn't music. And I'm
saying,
I love it. I love it. I'm glad
too.
I have my tin ear.
I love Motorhead. And
yes,
I'm just listening
yes.
all the time. And people listen, they're like, he can't sing at all. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, okay, he's not going to sing an opera, but dude, the emotion, the rawness, the fire, come on. It's like, I tend to
exactly.
like raw music. That's real, you know, that's what I lean towards. But one of the things I love about wrestling is the same that I love about books and I love about TV and movies and I love about wrestling. You never stop learning and discovering.
Yeah.
There's always something else that seems like it turns up.
Absolutely.
And I love that, because I'm a learner. I always like to keep doing and keep, you know. And what brings my, I mean, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure from your you're a pretty avid reader as well, right?
Oh yeah. I've asked my wife, Elena will tell you that I always have at least 5 books on my bedside.
Me too.
And it's just, whatever am I going to find? One of my favorite things to read is nonfiction based in Southern California, the LA area. There was one book that I got that was self-published by a guy a few years ago about a detective named Harry Raymond in the 1920s and 30s, who actually helped take down he was a pretty corrupt person himself, but he was one of these guys who go from being a police member of the police force to a private detective. And they theorize that that's what Ray Chandler, I bring up Ray Chandler for the third time.
All right.
Philip Marlowe character on. But one of the things this guy did, this detective did, is the police actually put a bomb in his car. It blew up with him in it, and he, rest of his life, he had shrapnel in. But that just made him angrier, and he took down the police department. And it was a story I knew a little bit about for years, but finally a guy wrote a really good book about it. But it wasn't just the detective he wrote about. It was a look into the vice and corruption in Los Angeles from the early 1900s up until the 40s. And you might feel this way about your home turf, too. When I read really well-written history about Southern California, it's emotional for me, because I love this place. This is home for me.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody feels that way about where they live.
Yeah, and I'm obsessive. When something sparks my interest, I dive deep and I want to find
Yes.
everything I can and learn everything I can. And so I buy books and I go and I
And
do that. I mean,
you must love that we're in the internet age because
yes.
things are so
Yeah.
accessible. Since the early 90s, I was really intrigued by this wrestler named Jimmy El Pulpo. And if the internet never came around, I would have never been able to write a story about him. I wrote a story for Greg Oliver for the Slam site on Jimmy. And if it weren't for having access to newspapers online and eventually able to get a hold of his family.
That's
But
what you...
I'm like you. I was just obsessive. I had to learn about this cat.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, it is. It's like, I mean, anything that sparks my interest, I want to go out and search for books and search online and learn everything I can. And I don't want to just know the surface stuff. I want to know the behind the scenes and how it works. And I want to know everything I can. And yeah, I tell my wife that all the time. It's so weird. I'm like, if you went back and told, 10 to 13 year old me, some of the people that I would consider friends and talk to as an adult, they would have, it would have blown their mind. I mean, it's like these guys that I watched on TV or whatever, and I listened to and different things, and now I'm communicating with them. As a kid, I would have believed that.
One of my early matches was against Wild Man Jack Armstrong, and he's the guy I would see get beat on TV every week when I was a kid. And I remember, even though he was a heel, I'd get upset that they never put him over because he just looked so cool. And I didn't understand at the time, being a kid, that guys like Armstrong and Rick Grayson were guys who had other jobs. So, they were only around part of the time, so they're going to be the jobbers.
Yeah.
But Jack Armstrong was awesome, and I never forget when I was went to lock up with him. I was just like, I'm wrestling Jack Armstrong. And nobody else understood why I was so in awe. Like, he was just a TV jobber. I'm going, no, he was the TV jobber. He
Yeah.
was great. And he's also one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet too, ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's same way. I mean, it's, again, talking about Calypso Jim. I mean, I consider Bo is what we call him, as one of my mentors, right? Because, and then, I got to know him really well. Still consider myself pretty close. He taught me a lot and everything else. And I remember, wrestling. The first time wrestling him, I'm sitting there in my mind thinking, I'm wrestling Calypso Jim, and I watched this guy on TV. I watched the guy that team. He was teaming with Dick the Bruiser, and all this and that. And I'm like, this is weird. This is so surreal.
And I know there's a lot of people who it would be just another day at work for them. And I guess that's another reason I'm glad I never got into it full time. I'm still kind of like a kid in some
Oh, me
sense,
too.
just
Yeah, I am
always
too.
discovering something new about it. And
Me too. It's.
I know people who are in it full time who eventually get burnt out or they're in it and I don't know. I would call myself more of a fan, maybe a historian, but I am glad I got to. It got to be play for me. I worked hard at it, but it was play. I never had to live out of a car or,
Yeah.
eat bologna sandwiches night after night.
I tell my wife all the time, I say, I don't think there's ever been any prolonged period of my life that wrestling has not been a part, as long as as back, far back as I can remember. And I always tell my wife, I'm like, don't get jealous, but my longest life relationship's with professional wrestling. So I'm like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I
It
mean, again,
grabbed a hold of me when I was 10 years old,
yeah.
1972, and it still fascinates me
I
to
was
this day.
like so many guys, I got hooked on it by my grandma. She watched it. She was
Oh, that's great.
that age old prototypical grandma that loved wrestling,
That's
but
awesome.
cheered the faces, hated the heels. When I was very little, she lived in a little bitty town called Edinburg, Indiana. And when I was very, very little, she took me to my first show at the Edinburg High School gym, watching a Bruiser show, spot show.
That is
I don't
cool.
remember it. I don't remember it, but they said I was there. I was really little. So it's
I
like,
confess, I still know the finish to every match I saw the very first show I was
yeah, no, well, I
at.
mean, when I got old enough to remember, I knew that, but I don't remember this show at all. But she was, I'd go to her house on the weekends, and she'd be watching wrestling, and I'm like, this is so
That
cool.
is so
It's,
cool. I see
and
I
it's
had
like,
no relatives who watched wrestling, and when I turned it on that one Saturday night and saw Fritz von Goring stomping and raking the eyes of Salvador Lothario. I'm like, what is this stuff? And I had a friend staying the night, and he says, oh, that's wrestling. I went, no, that's not wrestling. Wrestling is where you're trying to pin a guy on a mat. And he goes, no, that's professional wrestling. And I was like, wait, these grown-ups are dressed in spandex and they're behaving like kids?
Yeah.
I said, this is for me.
That's, I mean, it's the way my dad, he always said, oh, I hate wrestling. I hate wrestling. I hate that you watch that. And what do you watch that for? But yet then he would sit there and he'd say, oh, yeah, I remember. I went to the fairgrounds. I watched Dick the Bruiser and Haystacks Calhoun and Moose Cholock. And I'm like, well, you said you hated wrestling. Well, yeah, but. And it's like, you know, my dad, in Indiana, everybody's got a Dick the Bruiser story. And my dad was a police officer. And he one time pulled Dick the Bruiser over for speeding.
No way.
And he came up there and he's like, you know, that raspy, well, you know who I am. He's like, yeah, of course. And Bruiser took him to the trunk, showed him the title belts and talked to him a little bit and talked his way out of a ticket.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And I'm like, so even my dad who swore he hated wrestling, you know.
Yeah. A lot of my family didn't like it, but now they're all jazzed that I was into it. In fact, I remember my dad was a nuclear physicist and actually was on the Manhattan Project when he was in college. When he got drafted, he didn't get drafted. Wow. He signed up, but they took him to Los Alamos and he lived that. You'd never guess it because he was the most peaceful person in the world. I mean, he was just shy of being very gentle person. So I think he was a little surprised when I was watching, intrigued, especially when he's watching it aired on the Spanish station. He loved the Spanish commentator, Miguel Alonso, and he would watch it just to practice his Spanish. And I mean, he was a guy who just loved people and loved seeing different things. So when he took me to my first match, it was like he was just taken in with the whole crowd. And years later, up until he passed a few years ago, what he remembers most is there's that sweet little old Mexican grand lady who's screaming in Spanish, break his fucking leg.
Yeah. I'm telling you, everything they say about grandmas and wrestling is so true.
It is.
Even up to when I was doing it, I had grandmas chasing me around, swinging their purses at me at ringside and everything.
That's awesome.
It's like, even up to that, I was like, what are you supposed to do? It's like,
I got hit by a purse once too. And I felt like somehow I graduated. It was an older Mexican lady who we saw at the matches all the time. And I wasn't the only person that she did. But when she hit me with her purse, it was like a post-match angle. And I'm standing right by the people in the front row. And I hear this whack. And I see it hitting my back. I feel it hitting my back. Didn't hurt at all. I just turned around and I see her, and then she cowers like I was gonna do something. I said, no, I graduated. I got hit by a purse of an old lady.
The funniest
thing, I'm living the dream.
The grandma who always chased me around the ring was the promoter's mom.
That's awesome.
And I would tell him, I'd be like, Jerry, smarten your mom up. And he's like, hell no. She's like my best fan. I was like, all right, fair enough. I mean,
oh, that's awesome.
Oh, well, let's wrap this down, man. I feel like you and I can just talk for hours.
Oh, and, totally.
So, but you know, we'll revisit in the future. Let's keep this one contained. But you know, I always appreciate, and I said the same thing about Roy Lusher and several other guys, is one thing I can appreciate so much is you just have such a positive vibe about wrestling and everything. And I like that, man, because there's not a lot of that, man. You go online, you see so many people bitching and complaining and trying to be divisive. And it just drives me nuts. I hate it. It's like, because again, if I don't like something, I just move on.
It's like they're not even fans. It's like they're not even fans of wrestling. They're just fans of trolling. That's all they're doing. They just want to bitch and moan. Life's too short.
And if somebody likes something that I don't like, it's opinions. It's not right or wrong. So it doesn't.
It isn't.
It doesn't matter.
I will confess, when I was in my 20s, I did go through that phase where I had this very strong opinion it should be, and I'd get worked up. And then finally I said, wait, what am I doing? This is a waste of energy. Like, enjoy what you got, because it's not going to be there forever.
I'm lucky as a teenager I didn't have any internet, because I would have been in trouble. I'd probably been one of those guys, because when I was a kid, I'd get in fights with kids at school, or arguments, not fight per se, but when they call wrestling fake, and I was like, and I knew, I mean, in my mind, I knew it wasn't on the up and up. But I would, no one else was going to say that about it. I was going to defend it.
Same with me. Even before I knew what kayfabe was, I thought if you said it's fake, if you say it's fake, it's saying it's wrong, and it's not. But if you watch any TV territory for more than a couple of months, you know the rhythm of a match. You know who's going to go over, who will never get over. And you can even see surprise finishes, knowing it's a once in a while thing. But you know the pattern.
Yep.
But when you're a kid, you want to keep Christmas around. Santa's got to be real for a while.
Me and my wrestling buddies, we'd sit around and watch whatever else, and we'd be like, "Oh, that was so bad. Did you see how far he missed the? That didn't even look real." And we say that on whatever else. But if we went anywhere else and someone said that, we'd be tussling with them because no one outside that circle was going to put it down. It's like a sibling. It's like, I'll pick on them all I want, but you can't say anything.
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So it's like, and you know, I missed, I don't know. It was just, and it's like that in lots of stuff nowadays. I mean, so much gatekeeping and different things with movies and music. And it's like, I mean, I'm a huge horror movie fan, and I hear that all the time in horror movies too. People are like, "Oh, you don't really like horror movies because you just watched that one. And you don't like this, which is a real horror." I'm like, what does that even mean?
No, you like what you like. If you dig it, you know. I remember talking to Mickey Doyle a few years ago and talking about he wasn't too keen on AEW. And I'm saying, "Oh, well, you're probably going to hate me because I actually dig AEW." And he goes, "Why would I hate you for that?" He says, "I'm glad you're getting something out of it. If it gets over, it gets over."
Yeah. But it's always been that way, right? Every generation. Yes. Every generation is killing the business and doing too many spots and every, I mean, it's always been that way. And
it's always going to change. It's always going to be evolving. There's 20-year-olds right now who in 30 years are going to be doing the same thing.
Yeah. The only thing that I don't want to say it bothers, but it worries me is, like I said, this, the stuff they do now, I'm always so afraid. It's like, I'm always so afraid one slip and you're going to, it's like a career ending or life ending.
I'm with you on that.
That always worries me.
If I could magically make it so they could tone down the dynamic high spots they do, I would. I know I couldn't, but I get uneasy with that too. Especially, I remember about 10 years ago, I was watching New Japan for a while and it seemed like so many stiff shots to the head. That made me uneasy.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything, but you know.
No, it's like, but you know, I don't know. It's hard because you got to, you know, keep up in the end. That's the way it evolves.
Yep.
So how do you break? It's like, how do you break from that to level? It's like, it's hard. It's like anything. It's hard to do.
Yes.
It's hard to cap that progress.
And, absolutely.
But you know, I'm glad I'm not trying to do it now.
You and me both. I had a great time, but I'm glad it's in the past.
It's a lot easier when I could. Yeah, I could milk a headlock for a few minutes and jaw at the crowd to get a good reaction. I didn't have to worry about it.
Yes, exactly.
I worked in eye poke and things like that a lot sometimes.
I know it was a different era.
It was. But all right. Well, Vandal, thanks for coming on again.
I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, we could talk for, like I said, we'll have you back on in the future.
Anytime you want.
Talk about just something let else. Me know. Do you have a way, what's the best way for people to follow you on social media, see what you're up to? Because I know you pop up here and there, and I know they haven't been putting out episodes, but you were always a regular on the 605 and things like that.
I'm present on Facebook, Vandal Drummond. I'm on Twitter, but I'm not on there that much. Facebook is my main social media, Instagram too. That's my main contact.
Well, like I said, you're a very positive, approachable guy. Seems like you like, you know, I can't imagine if anybody ever wanted to approach you and talk wrestling or just shoot you a message that you'd ever turn anybody away. And so if anybody's looking to talk to Vandal, just look him up in there. So again, I'm glad we got to
do this. Thank you so much. Thank you. I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to do this. Like I said, we've been flirting around those same circles for a while and little interactions here and there. And it's wild that it's taken us so long.
We are so long
that we got to actually talk. So maybe it'll open up the floodgates and we'll get to do it more often. So
I look forward to it.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF Project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right. Thank you to Vandal for coming on and chatting with me. Kurt's a great guest. Love chatting with him. We'll have him on again in the future. But like I said, go check him out on the Regional Wrestling Podcast. One of the installments there that he does with Ray Russell talking about the dying days of Los Angeles. You can check that as well as all the other WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net, or you can download the app on all of your smart devices. Also, make sure you follow me on those social media. I'm on pretty much any platform out there. Just go and look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty, all one word, and you will find me there. Now, next episode, I'm checking one off my bucket list. A gentleman that I have been dying, wanting to talk to for so long. I'm a huge fan of this man. I've met him a few times, and just always wanted to have him on as a guest, but it was very hard to do. But I finally have him. My guest will be Flying Fred Curry. We talk about his legendary career as well as his father, Wild Bull Curry. So it's a great episode. Now, I will say up front, there were some connection issues with Fred. The sound might be a little off for this interview. I'm trying to get it edited and cleaned up as much as I can, but it is still very usable, very informative, very enjoyable. Fred is 81 years old, and he has lots of great stories to tell. It was certainly a fun interview. Fred had me chuckling through the entire thing. What a career he had, and I am excited for you all to hear that interview. Thank you all for listening, for supporting, for following me, and all the interactions you give. It is much appreciated. Continue to do that. Continue to spread the word. Continue to tell all of your friends about Wrestling Nostalgia and all the other podcasts on Ray Wrestle's WrestleCopia Network. Make sure you just spread the word. Just share all the posts. Tell all your friends. Say, hey, check these dudes out. They're all good. They have great products, great shows. But thank you for that in advance. So, until next episode, once again, thank you for listening. And wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty, Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.